tên tôi là Dave Fox. Tôi sống ở thành phố Hồ Chí Minh và tôi đi du lịch với Rick Steves.
Hi, my name is Dave Fox. I live in Ho Chi Minh City and I travel with Rick Steves.
Tên tôi là Dave Fox. Tôi sống ở thành phố Hồ Chí Minh và tôi đi du lịch với Rick Steves.
You could call Zach St. George a tree hugger and he wouldn't take offense. Zach has distilled years of scientific reporting and debate into a fascinating book that introduces us to five particular species of trees in a way that we get to know each of them almost as a community battling environmental challenges, and a community that's literally on the move. His book is The Journeys of Trees, a story about forests, people, and the future. Zach, thanks for joining us at Travel with Rick Steves.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I just think it's fascinating. First of all, you write this book, The Journeys of Trees, and you write about trees as communities. What inspired you?
Yeah, I think it was in 2014. I was living in California, and there was a lot of news about the plight of giant sequoias, which, of course, are the biggest trees on Earth and some of the oldest and tallest and all the other things we like about trees. And California was having a drought at that point, so I went up and was talking with scientists in Sequoia National Park, and they were really worried about the future and the very near future of these really ancient beings there at the park. And it kind of set me down this investigation and my own journey into kind of what trees mean to us and what the future holds in store for trees and forests.
Well, if we think about it in a sort of a micro way, we could just look at sequoias. I mean, it's called Sequoia National Park, and you wrote in your book that the time may come when there's no more sequoias in Sequoia National Park. In fact, the time may come where there's no more Joshua trees in Joshua Tree National Park. And the fascinating thing is, it's not that there's no more sequoias, they just may be moving out in order to accommodate the changes in the environment.
Yeah, you know, really, the disaster would be if trees didn't move and if the ranges of trees didn't move. So as conditions change on Earth, you know, the places that will be suitable to any one species will change. And so, of course, when we're talking about trees moving, we're talking about an iterative process. So you don't have individual trees getting up and moving, but you have, you know, the old trees dying in one part of the range and not being replaced and new seedlings popping up in new places. And so kind of over time, the range shifts. And so from the tree's perspective, that's kind of what's always happened. And that's what needs to happen. And, you know, it's the same for every other kind of life on Earth. You know, movement in response to changing conditions is what has to happen. The disaster comes in from the human perspective. And when you talk about a place like Sequoia National Park, you know, trees are very much kind of physical markers of place. You know, Sequoia National Park is named because of these trees that are so characteristic of it. So to us, it's a disaster. From the tree's perspective, moving in response to change is very normal.
So it's happened in the past. I mean, you read about how you can look at fossils and you can learn that, of course, it's not in a human time frame, but it's in a geological time frame. Can we learn about our trajectory by looking at fossils?
Yeah, I think, you know, fossils are often the best hints we have of the future because we can look at how things have behaved in the past. We know that 12,000 years ago, Canada and much of Alaska and much of Northern Europe were covered in vast ice sheets as big as the one that now is covering Antarctica. And what's there today covering Canada are these enormous forests. And so right there, we have clear evidence of when the world warms, you know, you have a giant shift and you have this huge forest springing up and spreading across Canada. So that's a good example of how trees have traveled in the past.
You know, I just got kind of happy right there because for a moment I was out of my human-centric viewpoint of the ecosystem or Gaia. And you just said, well, it used to be a nice sheet, and now it's a blanket of forests. And, of course, that's, you know, that's a huge amount of time. But life does go on, and the world accommodates these changes. And it might be bad news for our economy right now, but from the world's point of view, who cares?
The one difference, and it's an important difference that's happening now, is that it's happening much faster than at most periods in the past. And so there's been a lot of worry on the part of scientists and conservationists going back 20 years now about whether many species would keep up. And so trees are a great example because, you know, trees are not very fast beings. It takes a long time for a forest to shift its range.
Because, I mean, I think of it like there's, you know, in the future, there will be climate refugee communities of people where just entire communities will just have to vacate an island that's going below sea level or to leave a delta that is no longer inhabitable. Climate does change slowly over time, but in our lifetime, it's changing in human generations rather than in many centuries of time. And trees physically can't keep up with the change, which endangers the trees.
Right. So for some rare isolated species, they could even face extinction. So yeah, there's a real problem for many species.
And that's what you bring out so vividly in your book, The Journeys of Trees. Zach St. George is the author of The Journeys of Trees. He's joining us right now on Travel with Rick Steves. You'll also find Zach's byline on occasion in such publications as The Atlantic, Scientific American, and Outside Magazine. His website is zachstgeorge.com. That's ZACHSTGeorge.com. Zach, you wrote about how there's a tree in Florida, the Florida torreya. It's a tree that's stuck in the wrong place, kind of like you mentioned polar bears in a zoo sometimes end up growing algae on their fur and turning it kind of green because they're stuck in the wrong place. Tell us about that specific example, you know, where we see one tree that really doesn't belong where it happens to be. How did that happen and what is the consequence?
Yeah, so that's another thing that I really learned in the course of writing this book is that you can look around you at the living things in the world and sort of realize that, you know, some of them are maybe not living in the place they would most like to be. They're living in a place they can survive, but maybe it's not their ideal setting. And, you know, that has obviously human analogs. Many of us are not in quite the situation we'd like to be. But this Florida torreya is a tree that it lives in a tiny corner of the Florida panhandle. And by all appearances, it is not very happy. It seems to be a tree that would be doing much better further north. So a lot of people think it's kind of a tree that when the ice retreated and the world warmed up 12,000 years ago, it sort of just got stuck there and it reached places that it couldn't cross. And so it's been stuck in Florida.
I guess there is some environments where it's easier to migrate, even in slow motion, and other environments where you just reach a wall or the end of an island or the end of a peninsula or something like that. Now, Zach, you talk about the obstacles or threats to the health of trees. There's invasive pests, there's wildfires, there's humans, and there's climate change. We'll get to climate change in just a moment, but how are invasive pests, how are wildfires, and how are humans a threat to forests?
Yeah, those are all big threats. I mean, in the last 10,000 years, really since the dawn of agriculture, humans have cut down about half of the world's forests, scientists estimate. I mean, really, you could think of cutting down those forests as really humanity's biggest collective project. And most of that is in service of agriculture. We need the space.
Wow, you just said something fascinating. The biggest collective process of humankind has been cutting down the trees that keep our ecosystem healthy.
Yeah, I mean, you could think about it as this kind of enormous terraforming project that we've all undertaken for dozens or hundreds of generations.
So just clearing away so we can make room for big agriculture. So the humans are problems. What about invasive pests?
Right. So we mentioned earlier that, you know, sometimes the place where you find species is not necessarily the best place on Earth for them. I mean, if you could try everywhere on Earth out. So actually what we've done probably since kind of the dawn of again, agriculture and cities and commerce, but especially since World War II is move species all over the world. And so often species do very well in the places that we move them. And sometimes those species are insects or fungi that really like the trees in the places that we've moved them to. So there's really famous examples in the United States. The American chestnut was killed by a fungus beginning in the early 1900s. The American elms, which lined many streets across the eastern United States and Midwest, were killed by a fungus also from Eastern Asia. And currently, we're losing our ash trees. There's 16 different species of ash trees in the United States, and they're all being killed off by this beetle. So those are all good examples of how things can go wrong when you move species around the world.
In fact, one chapter in your book is called Kiss Your Ash Goodbye, I thought was quite clever. You also mentioned wildfires. I mean, I'm a little confused about wildfires because it seems like a natural thing when you have to thin out a forest with fires, and that happens over time. But how is that a threat to the well-being of forests in general?
Wildfires are another good example of where a natural disaster, our term for it is a disaster. From the tree's perspective, fires is quite normal. It's many species even need fire to open their seeds, or open their cones rather, and help perpetuate the species. But obviously it is a disaster from a human perspective, either when you have human buildings burnt, human lives lost, you know, smoke covering cities for months on end.
Okay, so fires are a problem not to trees, but of people who live with the trees then.
Yeah, and it can be both. I mean, you know, in the American West, where we're really seeing in this country the worst effects of fire, it's hard to disentangle a change in climate and the effects of fire suppression, because we've gotten over the last 100 years really into a very unnatural fire regime, is what the scientists call it, is in terms of how big the fires are, how frequent they are. Mm-hmm. So we're really in a strange place in the American West with our fires. And it's getting to the point where suppression is becoming more difficult and probably untenable.
Hmm. Journalist Zach St. George was raised in Alaska, educated in California, and is based now in Baltimore. He explores the migration of tree species and what we can do to protect the forest habitat in his book called The Journeys of Trees. In it, he reports on what people are doing to help 5 particular species of trees and how our fate is tied to theirs. You'll find articles Zach has written about the practicalities of addressing a changing climate on his Zach St. George website. That's ZACHSTGeorge.com. Zach, when I read through your book, it's just enthralling. And I'm a travel writer, and it's kind of a travel book in a way. And we can approach a forest like we would approach a different culture in our travels. Take us through a mindset that you wish we would have to appreciate if we're alone walking through a magnificent, a majestic forest.
The thing that I really learned to see when I visit a forest is its transient nature. You know, I'm looking at seedlings, I'm looking at the dead trees, and understanding that those are their own kind of movement. You know, every time a tree dies or a tree sprouts, that forest as a whole is shifting a little bit and things are changing. And it's almost just a trick of imagination more than it is something you can physically see, because of course it's happening outside of the human time frame. But I think it's a way into a sort of long-term perspective to go into a forest and just think about.
Oh, I like what you just hit there. It's outside of the human time frame. My frustration, even within the human time frame, is we do things in 4-year election cycles. We'll change our policies and everything. We're so impatient. Things move slowly. Things have to have time to get rooted. And now our challenge is to see things not even with a patient human time frame, but far beyond that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what's useful about trees in a way is trees are kind of this ancient symbol, this cultural symbol of a long-term perspective and kind of thinking beyond the usual terms of human life, an individual human life. And so I think it can be useful to look at a tree and think about who planted it or how it planted itself, and look at a seedling and think where it's going, and just realize that life extends far beyond ourselves.
Life extends far beyond ourselves. And, I mean, I've got this notion that the world is an organism, this Gaia thing, and trees are like fuzz on the skin of Gaia, and it's an organism that has a function to harvest solar energy. Do you work to get people to appreciate the value of trees in a broad sense like that?
Yeah, I really like that. I mean, my interest in certain ways is less about trees themselves and more about what they elicit in people. the people, as always, are maybe the most interesting part, because people are just fascinating. And so I met a bunch of people who are confronting these giant problems of climate change, of invasive species, of deforestation, and they're trying to respond and make things better. And I think in the course of doing that, they're kind of taking this longer tree-like perspective and thinking in multiple generations and in thinking about the future in a more thoughtful way than is normal. You know, and some of these efforts certainly will help the trees, I think it's safe to say. And some of them, it's a bit ambiguous. It's kind of hard to say whether the tree species, if it could advocate for itself, whether it would really want the help. But, you know, so it's a mix of human ideals and emotions and just kind of the will to do something in the face of an uncertain future.
I suppose one common trait, these people that you've encountered and have been fascinated and inspired by, is they are people who generally do not underestimate or underrate the importance of trees for our planet's health.
Yeah. You know, the average person kind of sees trees as kind of background. They are big, they're slow growing, slow moving. So I think it's easy to take trees for granted, not really pay a lot of attention, but they have a huge impact on our lives. And so I think when you do take a little bit more time to pay attention to them, it can be really rewarding.
I was going to ask you, what's the takeaway that you hope readers get from your book? And it might be just that. What is the takeaway for you, for people that are going to read The Journeys of Trees?
Again, I think it's try to cultivate the ability to look at a forest and see it as a transient collection of beings and just realize that it hasn't always been there in the shape that it's in now, and it won't always be there in the future in the same form, and try to use it as an exercise to think about the long time scales.
Yeah. Well, the more I understand my favorite cultures, the more I like them. And after reading your book and then taking some of that information with me into the forest, it's almost like a guidebook to appreciating that bioculture. Zach St. George, the book is The Journeys of Trees, a story about forests, people, and the future. Thank you so much for your work and for sharing it with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
You can find links to our guests in the notes for each week's show. That's at ricksteves.com/radio. It's been a retreat since Roman times and offers a relaxing getaway from the bustle of Milan, just an hour away. Coming up, we'll look at the appeal of Italy's Lake District with two friends who've made it their home. They'll take your calls at 877-333-7425. It's Travel with Rick Steves.